It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Sunday, December 4th, 2022. I'm Jared Halpern. One more race to go before the 2022 midterms are officially concluded.
Literally, I think that there's just exhaustion on the part of Georgia voters when it comes to that issue. I think people must have made up their minds by now.
I'm Ryan Schmelz. As Apple CEO Tim Cook pays a visit to Capitol Hill, members of Congress claim companies like Apple are showing bias on their app stores. But a bipartisan group of senators are hoping to regulate the market in a way they say will keep it more competitive and fair.
We need to look at the online marketplace and say, what needs to be tightened up?
This is the Fox News Rundown from Washington. Who has it better than Georgia? I mean, most of us only get that one election in November, but in Georgia, it's the final stretch of the second Senate election this year. As you know, Georgia's Senate race between Democrat incumbent Raphael Warnock and Republican challenger Herschel Walker went to a runoff with neither of the top two vote-getters cracking 50%. That runoff is Tuesday, the 6th. In-person early voting ended last week. And the results could make a big difference in the way the Senate operates the next 2 years. Yes, Democrats will keep the majority, even if Walker wins. The 50-50 tiebreaker belongs to Vice President Kamala Harris. But one more vote for Senate Democrats this year could have meant a much different-looking Inflation Reduction Act. It can also speed up how quickly President Biden's judicial and agency nominations get confirmed. A 50-50 Senate means each and every Senate committee is equally divided, and there are no tiebreakers in those committees. But a 51-49 Senate? That would give Democrats an outright majority, both in the chamber and on critical committees advancing legislation and judges. So those are the stakes this week. What about the landscape heading into the election? For that, I called on Russ Spencer, an anchor at Fox 5 in Atlanta and the host of the station's election special, Battleground Georgia.
I mean, 2020 was absolutely extraordinary, obviously, because control of the U.S. Senate was on the line. We had 9 weeks of a runoff period then. It's not as big a deal. It's huge, but it's not as big a deal this time because obviously the Democrats have their 50 seats already. But certainly all eyes have been on Georgia. And there was a lot of surprise 2 years ago when both John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock won that runoff on January 5th.
I'm always interested in these types of elections, these runoff elections, sort of at a time where people aren't accustomed to voting. What is turnout expected to be for something like this? Is it going to be as big as it was a few weeks back in November?
That's a great question. And I don't really know the answer to that. My guess would be no, Jared. But turnout has been extraordinary. There's no question about it. About 1.5 million people have come out and voted early. And then, of course, Election Day is on Tuesday. Democrats tend to come out more in the early voting period, Republicans on Election Day itself, but it's condensed. We have a new law in Georgia, a new election law that was criticized by the Democrats. Republicans say, look, turnout has been fantastic. There's no suppression here. But the fact of the matter is, for the runoff period, you know, we had 17 days of early voting before November 8th and only 5 mandatory days this time. So it's condensed and the lines have been long.
So I know that in the midterms, in the November election, the Republican incumbent governor really outperformed Herschel Walker, right? He's not in a runoff, so clearly he did a little bit better.
He did a lot better.
A lot better, right. But they didn't campaign together. Now I know that there's a bit of a, is it sort of an uncomfortable union between these two trying to rally the Republican support here?
That's a good question. I'm not sure that I would characterize it necessarily as uncomfortable, but I think you can make the case that Herschel Walker should have been using Brian Kemp earlier. Brian Kemp got 200,000 more votes than Herschel Walker in the first round of this whole thing. How those people are going to vote now is a big deal. Now, you're right. They didn't appear together before November 8th. In fact, they had rallies the night before the election, a mile and a half from each other. And it wasn't because Kemp didn't offer to go along and appear with Walker. It seemed like the Walker campaign tried to keep its distance. Since then, Brian Kemp has appeared on the stump. He has cut advertising. He seems to be doing what he can to help. If I were Herschel Walker, and I'm not a political consultant, but I'd be on the trail with Brian Kemp all day, every day. But that has not happened.
Did that change as a result of sort of the influence of former President Trump? What is the former president's role in the runoff? I know that he was pretty heavily invested, obviously, in the primary and in the general election in November. Has the former president been campaigning with or for Herschel Walker here in the intervening weeks?
Not at all. And apparently, they have done some polling that suggested that the former president's appearance would not be helpful to Herschel Walker. So, no, apparently there's been some online fundraising going on, and the president has been making some phone calls. Former president has been making some phone calls. But no, Donald Trump has not come in the same sense that Joe Biden has.
Right.
Because he's not popular here in Georgia either. You may know that former President Obama came to the campaign with Raphael Warnock again, and they're using different surrogates. Let's put it that way.
Friday at the White House, President Biden was asked if he was going to go down and help out Warnock. And he said, well, I'm helping out by phone banking in Massachusetts, which is a pretty far distance away from Atlanta and Savannah.
Exactly.
I think that's by design, right? I mean, both presidents, Biden and Trump, kind of know, I guess, when to show up and maybe when not to show up.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, consider this. It was former President Trump who suggested that David Perdue, the former senator, should run against the sitting governor, Brian Kemp. And he lost by 52 points. Trump's candidate lost by 52 points in the primary. So it kind of tells you that, at least in some sense, the former president's influence is waning here in Georgia.
Let me ask about Senator Warnock. He has, I suppose, the power of incumbency, though it's a little bit different because he hasn't served a full 6-year term in the Senate.
Right.
Is he sort of relying on his record? Is he trying to sort of run a campaign against Herschel Walker? Is he sort of running a campaign on sort of, look what I've done since I've been in Washington?
It's very much both. He has been talking incessantly about his role in capping the price of insulin, talking about expanding Medicare here in Georgia. He's talked about having worked across the aisle, the fact that he's the 18th most bipartisan U.S. senator, has worked with Ted Cruz on an interstate project, with Marco Rubio on maternal mortality, that sort of thing. But he has not been shying away, certainly in recent weeks. I mean, I think that the elbows have gotten a lot sharper about saying that Herschel Walker is unfit for office in his estimation, and goes through a litany of what he says are Walker's falsehoods about his educational background, his involvement with law enforcement, his business experience, and all of that.
Well, I mean, those issues became really pronounced in the November election. I know that obviously there were the stories about whether or not Walker had helped women pay for abortions. There were now questions about residency. Are those types of attacks or those types of narratives resonating with voters in Georgia, best you can tell?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. If you've seen an advertisement 500 times, if you see it 501 times, is that going to change your mind? I mean, literally, I think that there's just exhaustion on the part of Georgia voters when it comes to that issue. I think people must have made up their minds by now. But interestingly enough, I mean, the polls show that it's still, with all of that you're talking about, the polls show that it's still relatively tight. And I have been to and I have witnessed on tape a lot of rallies that Herschel Walker has done. And he attracts enthusiastic crowds even now. I mean, the guy, you can't underestimate the extent to which he has been a state hero for decades. As a consequence of, you know, the 1980 national championship that he led for UGA.
Let me finish with this, just sort of getting a sense of sort of how a runoff works as opposed to the general that we had in November. There's been no debate since the general election between Warnock and Walker, right?
No. In fact, I was supposed to moderate a debate between them a couple of Mondays ago, and neither campaign agreed to be part of that. Mm. It was, you know, obviously this is a condensed period. And some people are questioning whether we ought to have these runoffs at all. I mean, my understanding is that Georgia and Louisiana are the only two states that use a runoff in the general election. And it seems pretty clear that even though turnout has been good so far, fewer people are going to decide who our next U.S. senator is in this runoff than would have in the previous, you know, in the first round. And Raphael Warnock won that first round by 38,000 votes. It's not really a partisan issue. Let's be clear about that. I mean, David Perdue beat John Ossoff in the first round 2 years ago, and then Ossoff came back and beat him in the runoff. But I think people are questioning whether this is the Democratic way to do things.
Is the Georgia legislature considering a change?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay. Well, that'll be interesting to see if as that discussion moves forward. But you have a big night ahead of you on Tuesday. I will let you get back to work. Russ Spencer, really appreciate the insight and the on-the-ground reporting there for us in Georgia.
It has been a pleasure, Jared. Take care.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
The head of one of America's largest and most recognizable tech companies was in the headlines this week after new Twitter CEO and billionaire Elon Musk accused Apple's Tim Cook of threatening to pull Twitter off of Apple app stores. Musk states the conflict was resolved after a visit to Apple's headquarters and a talk with Tim Cook. For Congress, though, the question of how much power big tech companies should have with their app stores remains. A bill intended to regulate app stores by making sure they don't show preference for certain apps has passed the Senate Judiciary Committee with bipartisan support.
We hope to get the Open App Market Act over the finish line before the end of the year.
Tennessee Senator Marsha Blackburn is one of the co-sponsors.
As you can see, we've got a lot going on and in the middle of a lot of this that is happening right now. But the Open App Market Act would give you, the consumer, the individual that actually owns the iPhone, the ability to decide what goes on that iPhone, not Apple or Google and their app store. The way it is working right now, you have innovators of apps that want to get their app to market. So then they have to go negotiate with Apple. Apple says, we will put it on the app store, but you give us 30% of the profit from this app. And by the way, you've got to use our payment system. Well, we all know that when you get that payment system and that 30%, this is a very lucrative revenue stream for Apple and Google. This is why they're opposing the Open App Market Bill, which has broad bipartisan support. Senator Blumenthal and I have done this. It is so supported in a bipartisan way that it came out of the Senate Judiciary Committee on a unanimous voice vote. But this would allow you, the innovator, to work with you, the customer, the owner of the phone, to decide which app to put on to get your uploads to and your updates, to be able to pay for it the way you want to pay for it. And it is a good, solid, free market opportunity for our innovators. It will level the playing field. It will give them the ability to build their customer base and to work with that base, not having to just take whatever Apple or Google will give them.
You mentioned the bipartisan support there. Why do you think that's gotten so much bipartisan support? And, you know, what are the next steps here in terms of getting this done before the session ends? Or do you think this is something we could be looking at next session?
I think this is something we could get done this year because it does have bipartisan support and because people are so tired of big tech and what it costs to use some of these platforms, whether it is a dollar cost or whether it is that platform taking your data and your information and then monetizing that and selling it. And you're constantly bombarded with these privacy invasions because your junk and your clutter file are full every single day. And people are wanting to control who has access to their information, just as they're wanting to control what applications are on the iPhone that they themselves have paid for. They don't lease this from Apple. They have bought it. They've paid for it.
And do you feel that there might be an argument here that, you know, this is free speech, this is capitalism, Tim Cook and Apple can hold whatever apps they want, they can run their product however they want. Is there an argument to be made there?
You know, there would be an argument to be made there if Apple owned the iPhone and then just leased the iPhone to you. It's the same thing. Look, if you buy a car, it kind of goes by one set of rules. If you go lease a car, then you're going to play by the dealer's rules for how long you drive it, when it goes in, when it gets checkups, how you can use that, the number of miles driven every year. So it's a different set of rules.
Hey, what kind of other roadblocks could you be facing in terms of getting this passed?
The biggest roadblock is probably Chuck Schumer. And this is ready to go to the floor. It has support in the House. As I said, it has wide bipartisan support in the Senate, and we hope that Chuck Schumer is going to allow it to move forward.
And has he given any indication of him opposing it?
No, he just hasn't given an indication that he's ready to put it on the Senate floor.
And if it's not this session, you think he'd be willing to next session?
I think that people are going to demand that some things be done about the governance of the internet, whether it is online privacy, kids' online safety, some of the antitrust violations that you see taking place. People want to see a level playing field. They want to see fairness.
And Apple's also in the headlines for by threatening to pull Twitter off of the app. Is there any concern there? What kind of problems does that create?
One of the things that has happened with the Twitter Apple dust up is people were saying, well, why is it that we do have to go through the Apple store in order to get an app? And we were able to say, hey, there is a bill that would solve this problem. But that has caused so many people to ask why it is that Apple controls that. When Apple does not own that device, it is the consumer that owns that device. And consumers want to choose what they've got. You know, we've heard from so many hospitals, churches, financial institutions, organizations that have developed their own app. They would love for their members, for their congregants, for the children in their schools, for families to be able to have access to these without having to go through the App Store.
And with Tim Cook coming to Washington, have any of the sponsors of this bill agreed to meet with them, including yourself, or is that something anyone's considering doing, or has he given any indication he wants to meet with anybody sponsoring the bill?
I've had a conversation with him. My staff has also talked with a staff from Apple. I fully appreciate why they do not want this, because it is a very lucrative revenue stream for them. But I disagree with them. I think that consumer choice and consumer privacy overrides Apple's penchant for profit.
And speaking of consumer privacy, we've seen Governor Kristi Noem ordering an executive order to ban TikTok for state agencies and employees in her state of South Dakota. What are your thoughts on that?
That is the right type move. It mirrors the ban that we had put in place under President Trump's administration that prohibited U.S. federal employees and our members of the military from using TikTok.
Do you think that could create any free speech issues, considering it is a social media platform?
We have to realize TikTok is a social media platform owned by ByteDance. ByteDance is owned in large part by the Chinese Communist Party. They have access to the information. Using TikTok is a national security risk. That is why we do not allow our military members to put TikTok on their phones, and it's why we do not allow federal employees to use TikTok all around the globe.
And do you think there's a lack of public knowledge about this that could create some problems?
Many times I think it is people that just don't want to believe that the Chinese Communist Party is as aggressive as they are and that they are as evil as they are. What they're doing is collecting all this data, and they are building a virtual program, a virtual profile of you. I call it the virtual you. And what the Chinese Communist Party would really like to do is to own the virtual you, have access to your information, where you go, what you like to do, what you look like. That way they can identify you by facial recognition in large crowds.
And getting back to the Apple subject real quick, you know, right before we actually came on to do this interview, an article was posted where Mark Zuckerberg actually also criticized Tim Cook. And, you know, considering that the Senate has been pretty critical of some of these big social media company owners and CEOs in recent years, do you think that there could be some partnership here with the Senate working with some of these bigger social media companies to make this more regulated and more realistic?
What we want to do is focus on light touch regulation, and we need to look at the online marketplace and say what needs to be tightened up. Number one is we need to have an online consumer privacy bill so that you do own your presence. You have to give explicit consent to have a social media platform track you, follow you, collect your data, harvest your data, monetize your data. All of that would have to have your explicit consent, and they would not be able to knock you off the platform. And we need one regulator, the FTC, with the authority to do enforcement, not rulemaking, but enforcement on privacy on the internet. We also need a data security bill. We need to have our children's online privacy and safety that has to be considered. We have to update Section 230 and modernize that. That's the provision that deals with censorship and with fraudulent merchandise online. So all of those components need to be done. Now, Big Tech has, over the past 10 years that I've worked on this, they have fought every step of the way. I don't expect them to be helpful in this, but I do expect that the American people are so tired of this that they are demanding that we see some online consumer privacy, we see protections for children, that we disallow some of this fraudulent merchandise and the exercising of censorship to take place.
All right. And one last question, Senator. Do you believe you can get cooperation with the Biden administration on a lot of these goals?
The cooperation is going to have to come from members of the House and Senate, because the agencies do what we instruct them to do. So it is going to be up to us to pass the legislation, to put the guardrails in place, and then turn to the agencies and say, now you enforce what Congress has passed.
Senator Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That will do it for this week's Fox News Rundown from Washington. Next week, Georgia will again play kingmaker in the U.S. Senate, and we should have results and plenty to talk about in that battleground state. And cryptocurrency is increasingly getting the attention of Congress after the collapse of FTX. Are lawmakers prepared to tighten the regulatory grip? We'll discuss. Until then, from all of us at Fox News Radio, thanks for listening. I'm Jared Halpern from Washington. Please rate and review this podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.